Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Brady Wright and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Hey, and here is what's happening. You realize it is Tuesday, June 2nd. It's the 2nd of June. We are 6 months into the year. I want a do-over of 2020.
Yes, so
I think
do
I. We should just go back and start over again.
I'm 100% with you.
Man, Brady Wright, your host, Steve Johan, the producer, joining literally millions of listeners on this 139th episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. You can find us on iTunes and iHeart Podcast, Spotify, and Podomatic.com, and several others, which you keep meaning to give me a list of, and I really would like to have it.
Oh,
so
yes,
we
I will
yak
do that.
About that. Make a note.
I will make a note.
Good man, good man. Thanks for liking and following our Facebook page, by the way. And if you are watching the video of this show, way to go. This is show number 3 on video, and we're going to be publishing these as a regular basis. Our first segment is, as always, Back to the Blacktop, and that's kind of where Steve grabs all the automotive news he can find on the wall of his favorite, never mind, and he puts all of that on a piece of paper and brings it down here and occasionally talks about it. What do you got to this week?
Well, you know, it's to be honest, it's been in the last several weeks because, well, the last couple months, everything kind of slowed down, as we all know, because
yes.
of
yes.
the CVID, and well, good news. Fiat Chrysler Automobiles in Nevada has revealed that 85% of its employees in the United States, Mexico, and Canada are now at work building new vehicles after the long layoff triggered by the, you know what?
85%.
That's pretty good.
Not back to 100, but it's good.
No.
Better than it was.
You know, we'll take anything right now at
yes.
this point in
100%.
Time.
100%. Yes,
indeed. General Motors will be using the second shift it added last year at its Bowling Green, Kentucky plant to build more than 20,000 units of the 8th generation Corvette, which should ease concerns about buyers being able to get a first year edition of the new model. So, everything got slowed down to a crawl to nothing, and now they're going to be able to pick them up. 20,000 units. Do you think there's 20,000 people out there that have already pre-ordered these new vets?
Oh, I'm sure of it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm thinking
yeah,
so, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a terrific package. It is the official logical generation, you know, next generation. Yeah, it's a marvelous car, and it's about time, too.
And you haven't had a chance to take it out for a test drive, and I think that's going to be a little while longer until all this stuff lifts. And then we'll get the GoPro in there, and we'll do a little bit
yeah.
of filming.
Oh, we're definitely doing that.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
I'll do my level best to keep it under 100.
Yeah.
I promise.
As recorded.
Under, yes.
Yes. Because they won't let us take it out.
Under 100.
That's right.
Under, okay.
Oh, boy.
Now that I've said that. On video, you seriously think any dealer is going to go, sure, here's the keys.
Yeah, I know. We
or I guess here's
let the cat out of the bag.
Here's the fob. You know, I'm sure they'll ride along.
The mongoose out of the cage.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, the battle to develop the first viable self-driving vehicle just got a little more intense with the announcement that Volkswagen and Argo AI have closed a $2.6 billion deal to develop autonomous vehicle technologies. And I mean, it's like the whole rage is to get us out of our driving zone and let the machine drive for you. And I'm not going to, what's the old, you can't release my dead cold hands off my
yeah,
wheel.
I'm fascinated by the technology.
Yes.
I think it's a wonderful, you know, development of the ability to do that. I don't want to do it.
I don't either.
But good, you know, good on them for coming up with a way to make that work.
Maybe if it was on a track where there was like
Disneyland. There's a train, and it's not really the same thing.
Exactly. And yet they've had problems with trains crashing because they fell asleep.
Well, if you take a 30-mile-an-hour turn at 80, then yeah, probably.
They've had a number of issues.
Yeah.
Well, there is a strong suggestion. This is some really good news. That the Nissan Z car is returning.
Oh, that I hadn't heard that one.
Yes.
Really? Tell me
it's,
more.
Well, Nissan, which has badged the Datsun back in the 70s, came out with a groundbreaking 240Z, 260Z, and 280Z,
right. Oh, yeah. 300,
which
yeah,
took the
that.
Driving world by storm and yes. changed the world market from a boxy car. Remember those little boxy cars? To the sleek performance, fun-to-drive car maker. And the series was taken out of the pool a while back, and they just released a teaser video of all their new coming up vehicles. And in there, they had the silhouette
somewhere
of the brand new
in the
Z.
Back somewhere yep. that you can't really tell. Yeah, and it is about time. You know, the 240, the Z cars in the first place were always about being an affordable performance car.
They were.
I mean, they were a terrific vehicle. One of the first road trips I took, one of the first couple of guys, you know, rolling down Highway 91, you know,
right.
whatever, was in a 240Z. A friend of mine bought one, and actually he bought one from a guy who bought it and didn't like it.
Oh.
Now, this goes way back, so I have no opinion about this, whatever. But the guy bought it. No, it's not for me. And so my friend Roger bought it immediately, and we took it and just beat the bahoo out of it for about 6 months. And it held up to everything. We took it. We drove it down through central and southern Oregon, across to Idaho, Utah, came back up, you know, across the top of Montana. It was a great trip. And, you know, the thing stood up to everything we threw at it, including the passes.
And you could easily run over 120 miles an hour with that little bubby.
Absolutely.
Little car.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think it said 140 on the speedometer.
Well, but there was some speedometer error at that point, because
yes, of course,
mechanical speedometer. But, yeah, I mean, it flat, you could let the wings out and just take off.
Yeah, and it handled. Unlike the muscle cars, it actually wasn't bad.
Wasn't bad at all.
And
for the time.
That's right. And then there is another good news. After a 25-year hiatus, Land Rover Defender is returning to the United States, starting price at about $50,000.
It's competitive. Yeah.
The only model will be the long wheelbase Defender model of the 110. You know, it's been 25 years since they released it in the United States, and the reason why...
You're saying a 110. Is that a 110-inch wheelbase? Is
yes.
that what you're... Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
The longer version.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the reason why they hadn't is because of all the smog and emissions
right.
and safety issues, and now they've retooled so they can bring at least that one model into America. And which goes to show, I guess, we do have some pretty stringent safety and smog-related type stuff. But on the other hand, they can sell them all over Africa at any rate, and they'll be happy to have them.
Yeah.
And then, speaking of hiatus, Ford is reviving the Mustang Mach 1.
Okay. All right.
I didn't know, because I'm not a Mustang guy one way or another. I don't own them. I go to a lot of shows.
Sure.
I see the Mach 1s, and I thought they'd been available, but apparently
no.
It's been a while.
That package has been off the market for a while, yeah.
They still have the Boss, though, if I remember right.
Or
is that one even off?
You couldn't prove that by me. I don't know.
Okay.
And I know the Mach 1 is gone.
For all you Mustang fans, sorry, I should have done a little more research, but I know the Mach has been off for a while.
But you're an El Camino guy. You can be forgiven for not knowing everything there is to know about Mustangs. That's all right.
I know. But anyways, they're going to be bringing it back for 2021. And so then I started thinking, I wonder if they're going to bring back all their badged Mustangs. Anyway, I mean, I went to the
one
Shelby,
or two at a time,
the
maybe.
Shelby America, and they do all the modifications. And that's probably, I was sitting in there and I was thinking they got all these really nice things, but that's because it's an aftermarket place. It's not
actually through
the dealer. So, and then more than 24 states and cities filed suit against the Trump administration. Here we go again, in March. To roll back the fuel efficiency mandates set by the Obama administration. The current administration finalized its weaker rules in March. There's a big debate between builders and states and the administration, as it will be interesting to see how it shakes out. So again, the Obama, after 5 years, it was supposed to go up to 46 as an average.
Right.
And they're pushing to roll it back to a 41 miles per gallon. And to be honest, I don't know where they're getting these kind of mile per gallon, because in America, mostly people are buying trucks and SUVs, and they don't get that kind of gas mileage. What's your newest rig? It's an SUV. What does it get on average? 35?
We bought a 2019, although it was brand new, Mazda CX-5. And so it's the turbo, and it gets about 24, 26.
There you go.
It's not bad. Yeah.
Not but it's not 46.
It's not 46. No, it isn't. But it's a lot more fun. Hey, thanks for tuning in. Coming up with the Windshield View, we are going to be welcoming Matt Haugen to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Do not go away. That's you. Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'm more resourceful than I thought.
My suit can still make an impression.
My video games are still game changers.
And my lamp can bring others a bright future.
Because when I donate my stuff to Goodwill,
it helps fund job placement and training for people right in my community.
Now my stuff gets a second chance.
And will give someone in my community
a second chance too.
Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. That's goodwill.org. This message brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Project Yellow Light.
Hey, it's Hillary Nowak from Ink and Iron in Oakville, Ontario, Canada, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. We can't help you with the horsepower, but we can definitely help you with the chrome and rust.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service.
Hi, it's Jeff Conwell with the Monsters and Manson, giving a big shout-out to everyone at Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust is back with the first half of the Windshield View, and we are glad to have you with us. A well-known podcaster and all-around car guy is with us tonight. Matt Hogan of Hogan Racing is our guest. Welcome, Matt.
Is it Hogan or Haugen?
Haugen.
Haugen. All right.
Okay.
I always like to ask right up front.
No, you're good. It's super common. Actually, the first video we did on our YouTube channel was Who is Haugen Racing?
Oh, nice.
And that was like one of the first things I said was like, all right, let's
put this right up in front.
Yeah, let's just lay it down, because like there'll be announcers even saying if I've never met the announcer, if we're at a new event, and
right,
like,
on
Haugen,
that's another one. Yeah, I'm sure. Cool. Yeah. So you said YouTube channel. This is kind of a new thing for you, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. What's going on with that?
Yeah. So basically, it's kind of a crazy story.
We love crazy stories. That's basically all we do.
I guess it's not crazy. It's just weird. So like my plan was to never do YouTube. I was always like focused on school, and racing was kind of like, it wasn't a side business. It wasn't a hobby. It was a business of mine, but I was also doing these other things. I was focused on it with other stuff. And long story short, basically, my other business, I was working on, I'd gotten out of school, I'd been out for a year out of grad school, and I was working on a business outside of the automotive industry, and then Haugen Racing. We were doing Formula Drift, or we were about to that year. This was
nice.
Last spring. And somebody approached me about doing a YouTube channel, and I had a bunch of our like fans and friends and followers be like, you guys need to get on YouTube. Like,
sure. It, seems like know? It would be a gimme. I mean, with the stuff that you do, people love, you know, video.
Yeah. But for me, like, I'm not a big fan of vlogging. Like, I get
right.
it. I respect it, but that's not me. I didn't want to do it that way. And so I was like, until I can do YouTube the way I want to do it, you know, like professionally produced videos, not holding the camera myself, I'm going to wait to do it. And we'll see if that was a mistake or not. Cause I think I could have grown it, you know, a long time ago. But anyways, that opportunity came about. I didn't really know what our plan was. We just started making all sorts of videos, trying stuff. And now a year in, my other business is shut down, and we're full-time Haugen Racing, trying to make this YouTube thing work.
Well, it's really cool to see. I confess I have gone to your YouTube channel. I haven't looked at it very much. I didn't have as much time as I wanted to because stuff has been crazy up here with all the COVID and the rest of things that are going on. But you've actually been. I mean, you're a young man, if I can say that, since you're definitely younger than I am. You've been doing this for a lot longer than people your age really you would think to do. So, I mean, you kind of got your first car when you were 16 and you started racing. You know, but probably before that. So give me a little bio, because you got an awful lot under your belt for the AGR.
Yeah, so I, like, probably like both you guys and probably all the listeners on this thing, like, cars I felt were, like, in my blood, you know, from, like, day one.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We actually makes perfect sense.
My dad has a photo of me in I guess it was a diaper at that point, and a cowboy hat and cowboy boots, and I was trying to take the wheels off of his old Corvette.
Oh, so this was like last week or something? No, sorry. I just the diaper and the cowboy hat. You know, it's a thing.
I need to bring that outfit back, though. Like, honestly,
it's a look. It's a good look, yeah.
Hey, all of a sudden I got an idea.
No, wait.
For a video, a new video.
All right. That could be fun.
There's the credits for your YouTube channel right there.
So it was always a big part of my life, a big passion of mine. But like growing up and in school, I knew I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I'd never looked at the automotive industry. I was like, you know what? Cars are just part of my life. I'm always going to have cool cars. Racing was never something I considered. I would watch it or whatever. I was like just a fan, you know? But basically I started building cars with my dad, some, not anything too crazy, not like engine swaps, just tinkering around on old cars of his and having fun. But at 16, I got my first car, Toyota Tundra. And that's kind of when it all started going downhill or uphill. I don't know which way, some way.
Yeah. Well, you know, lots of people get their first car at 16, some a little before that, yeah. But you know, you get it when you get your driver's license, and you know, you do whatever seems to make you laugh when you're in the car. And for a lot of kids, and let's face it, 16, you're still a kid. Racing is a thing. I mean, even if you're not officially sanctioned and grabbing your helmet and going out on the track, people do that. You want to test your limits. You want to test the car's limits. So it seems like a pretty obvious step forward. You just took it, you know, a lot farther than, you know, a lot of other kids did. And I'm sure you had a lot of great support too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And like, so what happened was, at like 19, I got a Genesis coupe and I started kind of tuning that as just like a street car. And I'd done a bunch of off-roading in my truck, but I kept breaking it. So I ended up making it like a bag truck on 26 inch wheels. So I literally couldn't go off-roading. Like, I had to make it so I couldn't go.
You're not taking the donk off-road. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Then when I got the Genesis though, it was like, ooh, now I got a 6-speed.
There you go.
Yeah. Turbo, and I mean, really, I just started tuning it up, started going to like local track events through the shop I was working with, and we tried this one exercise that I teach a lot in our How to Drift videos, and it's basically like this wide circle of cones, and let's say 200 feet wide. You go around and go faster and faster and faster until you experience that loss of traction.
Pretty soon, yeah.
Yep, and then you're supposed to recover it. It's for road racing, but for me, I like stomped on the throttle and drifted around it. And I was like, what? This is so cool. And now we're here. So,
yeah. So well, burnouts and you know, donuts basically is, you know, where drifting started. I mean, you can do it a couple of circles, or you can do it in great big circles in both directions, you know, and there you are.
So, and how did you, how did you take that and start making, because you've got a video that shows people how to, it introduces people how to get into drifting and stuff. So was that kind of like you were saying, your entrepreneur spirit kind of kicked in, you've got a car, you've got some friends that can help you out with creating the, is that kind of the genesis of where the idea of actually teaching other people and having a product to actually promote and sell and help other people do the same?
So that's the thing, like Haugen Racing was never really a planned thing. Like, my focus was always on, either school or some other business. And and for a long time, it was a business, school, and Haugen Racing. So like, it was never, I was just doing it for fun, really, honestly.
Sure.
And then it turned into when I started putting cars into SEMA, and it turned into like getting sponsors and then building a platform to promote those sponsors and myself. But it was still never, I always had on in my bag, let's say, that I'm going to have a different business that's going to make me my money. And no matter what, I'll be able to fund my racing.
That there you go.
That was always my mindset.
Yeah.
Until basically.
And that's really common. I mean, people, you know, they have a hobby or an avocation of some sort they really enjoy. And so what can I do to make some money to front my hobby? That's kind of how, and a lot of people, especially some of the, you know, the big name racers, you know them as well, like that hobby becomes what they do because you spend enough time doing it that you get good at it. And then people start sponsoring and, you know, then you're at SEMA and all the rest. And all of a sudden it's, you know, the ends of the train have swapped.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, it's weird. And I didn't want to do it that way because I didn't want to, like, I guess what I always talk to my dad about is, like, if you want to, like, be super successful and make a bunch of money in the custom car industry, it's, like, a very small top percentile.
Absolutely.
The size of the industry, right?
Yep. Hey, listen, let's talk about custom cars when we come back. We're just about down to the end of this first segment. I told you this goes fast. There's no slogan. We're talking with Matt Haugen, Haugen Racing. You can go to haugenracing.com, H-A-U-G-E-N, racing.com, and check out all of his cool stuff. We're going to talk about some of that cool stuff when we come back. This is Horsepower Chrome and Rust. You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower Chrome and Rust after these messages.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States.
You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. This is Mark Green from Cars Yeah. I've got horsepower, I've got chrome, but I've got no rust.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you with the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the app.
Back with the second half of the Windshield View. This is Horsepower Chrome and Rust. Did I say that right? Oh, it's my show.
Yes.
Our guest is Matt Haugen of Haugen Racing. And before the break, we were kind of talking about how he got his YouTube channel started. And then we sort of drifted off into SEMA and some of that stuff. I want to hit SEMA for a second because you did mention that, you know, your hobby started to take over from your business plan, and all of a sudden your hobby became your business plan. But at some point, you know, everybody understands what SEMA is about, and at some point you say, I'm going there. And I kind of like to know how that one came about, because it's a big step. I mean, now all of a sudden you're in the league.
Yeah, so when I was Basically, when I started customizing my truck and off-roading it and then turning it into something I couldn't off-road, so bagging it and putting it on 26-inch wheels.
Right.
At that time, and actually still, sometimes it's funny to say it's like one of one when it's like maybe nobody else would do it, but I don't think anyone else has bagged a four-wheel drive Tundra. And
maybe
ours
not.
Was, and it was fully functional, which was kind of cool. And so when we did that, during when it was getting built, I didn't do a lot of the work on that build. When I was younger, I was still in school and stuff, so I did what I could.
Right.
And, but we just got tickets to the SEMA show from a friend. He's like, hey, if you guys want to go up for a couple of days and use them, go ahead. Back then, it was a lot harder to get tickets. Now it's
yeah, kind of yeah. Things changed.
Yeah, so we went, and I was like, oh, my God, this would be so, like, this is my dream to have a vehicle in here. I didn't know anything about it until I went that first year. And so then after the truck was finished and that next year, I was like, I want to get it in SEMA. And the guys who helped me build it were like, oh, we can get it in, you know, no problem.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, then had it that in there at like 18, I think, or something like that. And it was just a freaking dream. I mean, it was so cool. It was in,
yeah,
inside in a booth and unreal.
Yeah. For, you know, for a lot of people, I mean, going to SEMA is that's, you know, that's the show. That's the big leagues. And one of our guests who's been on a couple of times is a guy by the name of Kenny Earls, and he runs a program for high school kids, the automotive, you know, arts and things. And the kids last year, these are 16, 17, 18-year-old kids, they built a car from scratch to go to SEMA with. And what an amazing thing, you know, for them to do, for anybody to do. But, you know, at that age, it's pretty impressive to be in the show.
And we're talking build from completely fabricating their own design and everything.
Yeah.
And I don't even think the thing was completely done even when they took it out there.
Well, it was. I mean, they drove
They drove it down.
It has dual controls, Matt. It's got, like, you know, a driver's instruction car.
Yeah.
And they took it to SEMA and drove it.
That's really cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah, we'll have to get you. I'll get a link when I send you.
Yeah,
I'll
we'll
find the
link
for it.
Speaking of cool, now I'm going to change a little bit of gear here. You have on your website, which I absolutely recommend that everybody goes and checks out, in addition to one of the coolest merchandise sections I've ever seen, you have a picture of a Lambo Murcielago with a camera arm on the front of it. And did you build that thing specifically to take pictures of yourself driving? Is that what, I mean, is this a giant ego stroker? You actually use that thing? Come on, because it's pretty cool, let's face it.
Thank you. Yeah, no, so that camera setup, my friends down here, friends from college, they started this really cool media company.
Right.
For, not necessarily for the automotive, but for like, they did like Peterbilt, and they did performance and like,
sure,
large companies, Netflix shows, things like that. And they have these crazy camera setups. And one day they were like, hey, do you want to try to mount this camera on the Lambo? And I was like,
yes.
Yeah, well, it'll look ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and in all, you know, in all honesty, it does look ridiculous in a really cool way. I mean, it's a pro arm. If you haven't ever seen one of these things, this is not somebody's selfie stick. This is a seriously gimbaled and you know, cantilevered pro camera arm like you would find in any, you know, big
any
budget
movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's very slick looking. And obviously it changes the handling of the car a little bit, but I'm sure you bring it up and kind of warp it out a little bit when you're driving. Tell me what you do with it.
So we just wanted to put it on to get photos and video and see if it would even work. And then it was kind of cool though, because we could self film. So we did kind of some rollers. We were going like 30 miles per hour and had the car slam down and then rotated the camera around it, which was just really unique, you know, really unique view with that high quality of footage. Cause they
had
the camera on it was.
Sure.
Know,
well, plus you're, you know, getting a picture of a car that's about 2.5 feet tall. I mean, let's face it, you're right down there on the street. 30 miles an hour would look like about 70 at that, you know, that close to the road, I'm sure.
The best thing was the looks we got when people passed us.
No
they were
doubt.
Just like, is going on, like,
well, I wanted to kind of switch gears for a little bit, because you and I talked a little off air to set this interview up, and you said part of this whole thing is it a lot of it is you and your father, because your father's kind of in the back side of things. He's very supportive. He helps you with underlying a lot of things that you're doing, and I think it's a very unique scenario, because we have found within the car world and in some extent even the motorcycle world, it's a lot of times it is a father to son or father to daughter relationship where the father's been into cars for a long time and he takes his child or children and gets them involved and supports them and really bankrolls and helps them move along because this is their passion. Some kids do the I know people who do racing. I mean, they're out every weekend. The daughter's in the truck with their dad, and they've got their race car, and they're going all over the United States. And it's a self-finance kind of thing. So I think you kind of have a lot of that same similar. Am I correct on that?
Honestly, no. Like, it may have looked like that, but here's where it's unique. So my dad never raced. We have no family who raced or ever drifted. And he was into cars on the level, like, he never had a car in a car show. He would never go to local car shows. He had like a cool Porsche, and then he had a cool Corvette, and then he had a cool hot rod that he bought, not something he built. And like, I really took it to like a whole new level where he wasn't even able to help really. And so now, like, in the past, he's getting a little older now. In the past, he would help with just like moving tires around and stuff like that. And he's been super helpful with stuff outside of cars. But now he's kind of looking for something to do. And so I was like, you know, what would be really helpful is just helping get the word out on this whole thing. Cause it's like at a level where he's like, I can't even really help you now. I don't know anything about it, you know? So it's special and it's cool, but it's different. I haven't found another similar relationship because a lot of times it is like that where the dad passes their passion on.
Right.
It wasn't like that. He just brought me to a couple car shows and I was just freaking hooked.
So he actually supported your vision and your fun. I think that's equally cool.
It is.
No, totally it is.
Yeah. So speaking of that, now you're sort of calling card, if you will, was drifting, and I'm sure you've seen Tokyo Drift and all of that kind of stuff. I know that you're a big fan of Japanese culture because your website has some pretty cool stuff on it. It may be the only car-related website I've ever seen where you have the store, and you advertise. You got tops, you got stickers, shirts, accessories, but you've got nobody flags, and you've got Surikawa, which I know what that is, but what? Tell people what Surikawa are.
The Surikawa rings, you're saying it better than I am. Jeez. So they came from like the Bosozoku and Shakotan culture back in like
there you go.
The 80s and 90s in Japan, like the bikers, which turned into cars and
on
and on. They would basically go and steal the handles from the metro. Like if you're in a subway station, you know, like a little handle hanging down you can hold on to, they would unbolt those and then put them on the back of their car as kind of a screw you to... government, whatever.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's very cool. And you may very well be the only car-related or racing-related stuff that has Japanese product names.
I don't know if we are, but that's cool to hear. Yeah, I know. We definitely want to – I want to put, like – I got inspiration from – I'm not, like, only in the Japanese culture or only in the drifting or whatever it is. Like, I've been around bag trucks so much and lowriders and custom cars, exotics, and so that I try to meld all that and make my own style. That's like, it's really is like art to me.
And the website is very artistic. I just have to say that it's really nicely laid out.
Yeah, and it's fun. And then when you click over to the YouTube channel, he's got a really cool one where you've kind of stepped up to the plate and decided, we're going to do something different with the YouTube channel, and that is you've combined comedy and auto and other things. And I watched the rich dude guy, and you use yourself and everything. But I see that you've got a new one, which is the racer dude or the late night street racer guy. And I haven't seen that yet, and it looks probably like it's going to be quite funny. But
the arrested one?
Which one? Yes.
I got arrested street drifting. That was super fun.
The black eye.
The black eye.
It's a good look. Yeah, that's nice.
I think
that's honestly one of my favorite ones yet. I feel like because none of us are actors. Like
sure.
I hope someday I can say that I am and I'm at that level. But it really is us all just like learning. And we were just on point that night. Like literally, just like one take for most of the stuff and just pumped up. It was cool.
You know, that's kind of how it starts, though. I mean, you do a few of those, you put some stuff on YouTube, you do some Instagram stuff, some TikTok stuff, and all of a sudden, you know, you got followers and you got, you know, you're a content influencer, and there you go. You know, it doesn't take long for somebody to make a phone call and go, you know, I got this thing, it's a small part, but maybe you're the guy, and then you go.
That's right. And you're young enough that you've got longevity ahead of you, whereas us old guys, we're starting late in the game, but it's never too late.
No, it's not. It really isn't. I'm a huge believer in that.
Yep, me too. But I love the fact that we want to invite everybody. And again, it's Haugen Racing.
Haugen
Racing.
Haugen
Racing. Like Shaugen. No.
HaugenRacing.com.
And then on there, you'll click over, and there's going to be a YouTube channel. Folks, take a look at it. You're going to laugh your head
good
off.
Stuff. Just good stuff.
And you got the picture in the front with the Japanese in the background. Am I correct on that? With the gal standing there, she's.
Oh, you got some anime?
No, it's an actual.
No, not anime.
It's an actual woman. What do you call the women that are? She's got her face painted and everything.
Oh, a kabuki.
Kabuki.
Oh, I just totally like spaced on that.
No.
You know what they're called.
Them. That's the
them.
One.
Anyway,
those
but
guys.
It's you're there with a picture of your car and you, and then we may be using that as the promo for this show. So,
oh, that's cool. All right, I'll go find it.
So it's really cool.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Now,
well, I haven't. It's been a while since I've been to Japan, but I did go in 1986 and spent quite a bit of time over there. In fact, I got to tour the Honda factory.
Oh,
So. Seen some, done some, that kind of stuff. But you know what you're doing is. And by the way, let's not make this like it's, you know, just some fell into it kind of thing. Matt's actually a pretty sharp guy. I don't want to embarrass you, but you got a master's degree in science and entrepreneurship and innovation from USC. So you're not a slouch. You've been down the block, and you got some, you know, some educational background to what you do. Yes, I read your website. I try to do as much prep as I can. And you know, it's funny. It says. On your page, it says you began drifting professionally in 2016. And it's like, okay, cool, and you've got all these things. Friends, that's 4 years ago.
I know.
That's a lot of chop for 4 years worth of pro stuff. So, you know, good on you. Congratulations.
What's your favorite car for drifting?
What'd you say?
What is the car that you use mostly for your drifting?
So we have, like, we've used a bunch of different cars, but my, like, favorite cars are Skylines. So
there you go.
Our pro car is a R34 Skyline, and our practice/demo car is a R32. And then we have another R34 sedan that we're going to build as a demo car probably next year.
But. You know, it's funny, the basic cars, like, I mean, I don't want to say basic, but, you know, those things end up being real popular. The Bob Bondurant driving school, you know, for a long time they used Fiat 124s and, you know, stuff that was not really exotic, but controllable and predictable and all that stuff, and you teach somebody stuff, and that's what you want. You don't want the crazy stuff. You don't teach them in the Murcielago.
Yeah.
That's.
I think they're just like, I don't know what Nissan was doing in the 90s, but all those cars are just badass for drifting.
Yeah.
Racing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, isn't
it's
that,
almost like they saw it coming.
What was, it's crazy.
Well, and I was going to say, they were like, like what Honda started doing, but they have the front wheel drive, but the Nissan had the rear wheel drive. So they were like the car. I mean, it's just like, in price, you can get them for quite easily for a good price. And,
oh, yeah.
And,
well, plus,
and,
there's a million of them out there, so there's always parts.
Yeah. Yeah, especially with the R32. The R34s are a good amount harder.
Yep.
But those cars, I'm telling you, they were like, that's one of the most well built cars. And it's only an early 2000s, so it's not, I mean, I guess it's.
Yeah. It's funny, though, that, you know, I mean, drifting, I think in all fairness, started in Japan, but those cars are a lot more prevalent and available here because you probably know in Japan, the older your car is, the more the road taxes they charge you. And there's a point where, you know, if your car is like 7 or 8 years old, it's cheaper to just junk it and buy a new one than it is to pay the tax to keep the thing running. They don't want old cars on the road.
Matter of fact, they send their engines over here at about 100,000 miles. And people will buy them and put them in their cars, and then they'll put a new car in their car over there, a new engine.
Yeah.
So it's quite a little racket that they've got going there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're coming down to the close of our show time with you. And, Matt, again, it's been wonderful having you on. This has been fun. And where do people go to find more about you again?
Well, you said it. You gave me a huge shout out. I was like blushing over here.
Hey, well, don't do that.
It's Hagen Racing. It's HagenRacing.com, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. We're pretty easy to find if you know what to search for.
Super cool. Perfect. We'll make sure we put those links on the page. Matt, thanks for stopping by and having a conversation. This will be up pretty soon. And you need to come back because we got cool stuff coming up. A hot rod story you can share with your friends and more on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Today we decided to walk to school. The light counted. 15, 14. 41,
31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted.
I realized
he forgot his homework.
I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States.
Hey guys, this is Carl with Garrett's Rod Shop on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And these guys are great, so listen up.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving.
This is Vince LaViolette from Shelby American in Las Vegas, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
It's time for Cars Confidential, Brady, and we're back with another story from Lance Lambert. He has been very popular in the last couple months. What do we got going this week?
Lance is a popular guy, let's face it.
He is.
He's an amazing person.
Northwest legend.
In his own mind.
In his own mind.
It's true. Now, actually, this one is from Fenders, Fins, and Friends, which we really enjoy. Confessions of a Car Guy. I'm showing it to the camera now. And, of course, you can get it at the Vintage Vehicle website. And let's face it, your bookshelf would not be complete without them. You can also get them on Amazon. Anyway, this week's story is called, and I have to do my 1950s announcer voice here.
Okay.
It's called Wheels of Justice. Wheels of Justice. So I've always had a fascination with police cars, and to have Lance start a story with that line, I've always had a fascination with police cars. You gotta, you know, knowing Lance as we do, it's probably not the outside of the car that he's had a fascination with.
Well, his dad was a sheriff.
Probably due to my father's 20-year career as a police officer in Tacoma. He started as a rookie in 1949 and ended his tenure in 1969 as a detective.
Oh, okay.
I was always proud to see my dad leaving for work in his uniform. That included every gizmo that a police officer needed to fight crime. That was, of course, the gun, the handcuffs, the billy club, and bullets. But the coolest piece of equipment, let's face it, was the police car. I think my first ride in a police car may have been when I received a hit in the nose during a football game at my grade school. Now, throughout my academic career, I grabbed any opportunity to get out of school, and I realized that by keeping the blood flowing, I would likely be released from the halls of my elementary education.
He was tailbearer back in those days.
He was working on it.
He had the plan.
So my father was called, and he came to my rescue in a gleaming 1957 Ford police car, Crown Victoria. He came walking down the hall in his uniform for the world, and my curious and perhaps envious classmates to see. Now, Dad and I left the building, climbed into the police car, and drove off into the afternoon sun, looking like, in my eyes, the two most important people in the world. The next day, a few classmates commented about seeing me leaving the school in the care of a police officer. I told them that he was my father, and they responded as if I was the son of Superman.
Yeah, back
able
in the day.
Able to leap tall. Never mind. One unofficial and unauthorized use for Dad's police car was bill collecting. Now, my brother Jay had a paper route in a part of town where the residents seemed to have some difficulty paying their monthly bill. Jay's routine was to walk the route and collect payment once a month. This always resulted in a few customers giving him various reasons for not paying and asking him to come back some other time. He did. In a police car.
I like it.
It was amazing how many customers seemed to have no problem finding the money when they saw that he'd arrived in a blue sedan with a red gumball dispenser on the roof. This was back when they had red lights.
Ooh.
Remember calling them gumball dispensers?
No,
gumball
I don't.
Machines? Yeah, but that would, because they kind of looked
like...
Because
they were
like,
just the round?
Well,
little
yeah,
thing
with
on the
a
top.
Little fez-looking thing.
Yep.
So one of my favorite memories was spending an entire day riding with Dad in a city-issue police 1959 Ford. It was very exciting to observe him as he drove around the city investigating various illegal activities. The two big criminal capers we looked into that day were theft of a ladder and, I'm not kidding, the theft of a lawn.
Oh, my gosh.
Not a lawnmower, the lawn.
Yep.
The short investigation revealed that the person reporting the stolen lawn had not paid the landscaping company for the sod installation, and the company just came back at night, rolled up the lawn, and took it away.
Oh, I like it. Now, would you ever hear a story like that today? No.
Well, I don't know if you stiffed the landscape company. Maybe.
Oh, I love it. They rolled up the lawn.
No, you're not going to pay for it? Well, we'll take it back.
I love it.
Hasn't even taken root yet.
That's like a repo.
I repoed your lawn.
Repoed your lawn.
That's good stuff. I like it. Occasionally, Dad would give me a ride to a friend's house, and despite his reluctance and due to my persistence, I was allowed to announce my arrival by pushing on the horn ring and causing the siren to wail. I'm sure many parents were not very happy to hear my arrival. Not all of my rides in police cars have been warm and fuzzy father and son outings. However, every police car I see reminds me of those few wonderful times spent with Officer Lambert. And he's put a picture of his dad's police officer card.
Oh,
here.
Okay.
Yeah, business card from when he was a cop. And what a cool thing. I mean, I've known over the years a lot of people who were in law enforcement, and
yep.
You know, some of them still are, some of them have moved on to other careers, and when I was some years ago, gosh, it's been a number of years ago now, I spent some time on the community policing advisory board of the city where I lived, and so as part of that, we went through the civilian academy and did a couple of ride-alongs and went down to what they used to call Rampart, which was the call center for 911
Rampart
calls.
51.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe that was what it was, maybe it was actually called that.
Oh,
that's
from
what
the
they
TV
named
show.
Oh, I know, but I mean maybe they named the TV show after that. I don't know, but
yeah.
Or maybe they just told us it was that because it was a cool thing from the TV show. I don't know, but it's doing ride-alongs in cop cars is very interesting. It's the officer Esmeralda was the fellow I rode along with, nice guy from Hawaii.
Well,
and it was very cool.
You know, he's had a 54 Ford,
57, and then a 59.
But that he talked about there in the
59.
So I'm thinking we have our friend with the Seattle PD. Police Museum.
Right, yeah.
And I'm thinking, we'll have to get him back in again because they might have one of those.
Well, they probably do. I know that at the Western Washington Fair in Puyallup every year in the fall, there is a big exhibit, a law enforcement exhibit, down at the southeast corner of the fairgrounds, and they have all kinds of cars and you know, older kind of stuff. I don't know if they had a 59. I don't know if they had a 57. I just remember seeing some older cars.
What was the TV show? Was it Car 54 that was the old black and white and they would run around? That was like one of the first.
That certainly was one of them. Gunther Tootie and Francis Muldoon were.
Do you remember what year that car was that they were using?
Oh, man. It had to be 50s or early 60s.
Right.
because the show is that old. But there was also Highway Patrol with Broderick Crawford and M Squad with Lee Marvin. There were a bunch of cop shows. I mean, I saw a couple of the
M Squad. That's like a half hour episodes. I went, that's where he got his start before he went into the movies.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, he had done movies before that. But yeah, television was a big deal for him for a long period of time.
Right.
Yeah.
It was kind of more of a detective.
M Squad. The detectives of M Squad.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, great stuff.
Little gritty and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I remember in the opening scene of that show, the credits, he jumps out of his car, leans over the roof, draws his 2-inch revolver, and lays it on his other wrist and shoots at somebody off camera. This is his bang bang. And if you've ever shot a revolver, they spit powder out, you know, at that point. So basically what he would have been doing is burning or setting his coat on fire. And I thought, this is not a good thing to be doing, but I didn't realize that until much later. I was a kid.
Wasn't that kind of a common practice in a lot of the TV shows?
In Hollywood. Yeah, they did a lot of stupid stuff with guns back in the day.
Yeah, because you handle guns, and you know that would leave a nice powder burn.
Set your coat on fire.
Yeah, a nice powder burn, especially that era of a car.
Yeah, not a good... Well, that era of a gun, too.
That's what I'm saying.
That funny stuff. Hey, thanks to Lance for letting us read stories out of his book. Again, you know, they are available on Amazon. You can get them at the Vintage Vehicle Show website. Fenders, Fins, and Friends, Grins, Gears, and Gasoline, and several others. And Lance has now embarked, of course, on a career as a storyteller. He's doing lots of appearances around the Pacific Northwest, and you would enjoy having him come to your place and tell stories, because he's really, let's face it, very good at it. And he's also in my car club. So,
well, yeah, and he
Ghost Steeds.
It is. And, you know, it's interesting because there was a picture on LinkedIn, and some of the guys I'm connected with, they post old black and white, and they had a whole group. Looked like probably the very early 60s. There was a hot rod they were working on and some late 50s and early 50s.
Oh, you mean
cars.
Lance's car club?
No, it was like, it reminded me because they had... Several of the guys had the club jackets, kind
of
like what you've got.
Oh, right, of course, sure.
On the back was the name, and it just reminded me, boy, the Steeds, that was a really big thing back in the day.
Oh, car clubs? Yes.
Car clubs.
Huge stuff.
More so than the motorcycle clubs, weren't they?
Oh, I don't know. It was just different.
Just different.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of non-1%er.
Because when I grew up, we didn't have any clubs.
Oh, yeah, they were kind of every place. Hey. The Nathan Lipinski Weekly Trivia Question is coming up next, and a peek at next week's show. Put it in park. Stick around. We promise we will be here when you come back.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hang on till right after these messages.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Looking for a job worth talking about? Teaching is creative, collaborative, and intellectually challenging. See why teachers have better work stories at teachdfw.org and learn more about becoming a teacher. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
This is Scott Patterson with the Cruisin' to Colby Car Show, the place to play on Memorial Day. I want to thank our friends here from Horsepower Chrome and Rust for having us down, and we appreciate the day.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can, you're an El Camino, El Camino.
He's the El Camino Man, ladies and gentle spoon. It is now Around the Wheel, and that, of course, is where we talk about upcoming events, the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Trivia Question, and stuff that is coming up perhaps next week. I got to say, the event section of of the show has been pretty sad, pretty anorexic lately.
I'll use the sound that they use like on Antiques Roadshow, and what they do is they have the old version. Well, it's got the old that they replay, and then it goes...
Yeah,
and it shows the arrow going down.
All
that,
of those.
Well, those. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The actual formal shows, many of which have been canceled. You know, they would normally have taken up a good piece of real estate here. But now, what's happening? And I'm kind of glad to see this. Several of our friends from the show and from the community locally are organizing cruises. So it's not really a show. They're cruising around a neighborhood. They're cruising past the senior citizens' home. They're cruising past elementary schools, kids' birthday parties, stuff. Yep. Like that, just to actually get together and do a cruise. They're still able to maintain social distancing, of course, because you're in individual cars. And if they do stop someplace, it's a place with a drive-in so they can, you know, maintain all of that stuff.
Sure.
It's a great sort of thing to see, because the whole idea of a spontaneous car show or a spontaneous cruise is kind of how all of this stuff got started in the first place. So I'm glad to see it.
We never had, as a kid growing up, I do not remember going to a car show. I grew up in Ferndale, a little town, and then we had Bellingham. But I'm telling you, there was muscle cars in my neighborhood.
Sure.
They were working on them. Everybody in town had one, it seemed like. And when I hit high school, buddies had them. I'd go in their cars. I'd drive around with them. I longed for one, but I ended up buying my dad's car
instead. Used to cruise.
And we cruised.
But there wasn't really anything organized.
No, we cruised. Yeah. We'd show up at the Herfies, was a big place, and everybody park. And then you'd have a couple other restaurants or drive-ins. And then there was parks. Hey, we'll meet you at the and off you go. Yeah. And it was just
It's kind of good to go back to that, I think.
I think so, too.
Reconnects you
it
with how we got
started.
Used to
be here in Linwood that you just meet on a Friday night down at the grocery store, and there'd be 15 to 20 guys,
that's right,
gals hanging out, and or the taco time. And it wasn't anybody's. It was just like, I wonder if anybody's over at taco time tonight. And
Could
you go
be.
Up, and there all of a sudden you'd have
cars. You made the loop of whatever, you know, route around the various and sundry drive-ins and stuff like that. Yeah, you bet. Hey, the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Automotive Trivia Question from last week had a winner, Robert Marston from Ballard, which is one of our local suburbs here in Seattle. The question was, it really was kind of a true or false question, an automotive factoid. In 1972, the average speed on L.A. freeways, the average now, was about 60 miles an hour in 1972. Just 10 years later, 1982, the average speed had dropped to 17 miles an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
And the question was, you know, is that a true or false? And Robert Marston knew. He said, no, actually, that was absolutely true. It was. And, of course, it was due to traffic and congestion and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, good on you, Robert. We're going to make sure you get a certificate on air that shows you a full 8x10 winner certificate, and you can sit there like holding the coveted bucket of HC&R Barn Fine Dust. But for next week, we got a great one. This is also one that's kind of, it's a backwards question. So lots of companies have lots of products that are kind of their seminal product, you know, whoever invented the rumble seat, you know, stuff like that. There was a company that did the very first synthetic rubber tire, not real rubber, but synthetic rubber, and the very first run flat. Same company did both. What's the company? If you know, you get with us on Facebook, send us an email at contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com, and you too could be the winner of the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Automotive Trivia Question. It could be you.
Yes, you.
Yet you.
You.
You could be the one.
Not me.
And Nathan is even now Googling the answer, I'm quite sure, so that he can get a head start on the thing.
If we ever do the show really live, people can actually type away.
I want to do a call-in show. We probably could do captions at some point.
Yeah.
That could be cool. Hey, we reach about a million car enthusiasts every week. Your message gets directly to them. So if you got a business that caters to car people, let us work for you. Email the show at contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com or message us on Facebook. For Steve Johann, I am still Brady Wright. Thanks to Matt Haugen for chatting this week. Keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, we trip the lights on another Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.